is Kanan's funeral. Driver Kanan. Somebody who is a big part of my childhood. The drums have started. The women sitting next to me are all holding each other in a circle. They're singing repetitively a song. Shanti, Kanan's daughter, is above me. It's now 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and a big cortege bed made of flowers stands in front of Kanan's house. More and more people have gathered. They're preparing the body to take it to the cremation ground. Fire blasts are going. Kanan is laying in the bed. The family is going around. Off he goes. The cortege is leaving to the cremation ground. I'm with the women, so we stand back. Hi, Frederick. I saw you at Kanan's funeral on Sunday, was it? And I have a lot of memories of Kanan from my childhood, and we called him Driver Kanan. And so I wanted to ask you how you've known him for the longest time. He worked with you, and so if you could share some of your memories, how he came, how did he come to Oregon?
When you told me that you'd like to do an interview on Kanan, I tried to recall. And it's a strange phenomena. He is very strong imprints in my memory, but there is no continuity. So they're like fixed imprints, and I might just refer to them. It's not a chronological narration. Kanan immediately brings out a sense of loyalty and bhakti. He is a man of heart. He has no education. He was just there and wanted, actually, I feel, work, serve the mother's dream. The strongest for me was when we sat under the banyan tree, and more and more people. It was actually in protest that we were cheated. We had occupied the Bharat Nivas, regaining it for Oroville from the society. Then the collector came in and said, okay, you move out. this is illegal possession, but I promise you we will look into the matter and you will get what they called at that time de facto independence. So we...
This is in the late 70s?
No, it's... Yeah, it's the late 70s. Canaan came much earlier, obviously. I tell you about that, but I'm just telling you that one imprint. And then we were cheated, we were not given anything, we were just made to move out and that's it. So we sat under the banyan tree and it went on and on and on and so on, fasting.
So it was a hunger strike.
Hunger strike, right. So basically in the end he and maybe Yusuf, another very faithful and loyal, very, very beautiful Muslim, we sat there and then we were again given something to talk to and why don't, and then I said, let's stop, and then Kanan sort of was, why? But this kind of spontaneous making himself available, whatever, you know. And so he has been in and out of my family life, like when, you know, you were small, the other kids were small, he would always be available for anything. He was always, he never made much money. He had some land, and even there I still recollect one piece of land he actually, like many Tamilian at that time, gave to the mother for her temple, for her city. Then there was one small piece left near Certitude, which he also wanted to get into making money like everybody else was getting rich around him. Obviously it failed. He saw everybody raking in money with taxis. And he sold that very valuable piece of land next to Certitude for a cheap rate, got himself an ambassador, and never saw the small print. These are called vultures, these people. They say if you three times default, your payment, you lose your thing. So within 6 months, he had no land and no ambassador. Finished the story. Just to tell you that he had to also suffer for his loyalty, naivety, and bhakti. And another thing, obviously, also people with a big heart, I'm not defending drinking, but they often are prone to drink, which he did. And people say he lost his job as a driver. Many people remember him from Barry Jump. Because he wasn't just a driver who would drive there and then everybody goes out and then he was lying in the car and sleeping. He would go out, unpack, carry the gas bottle, carry the tent, helping the kids. I mean, he was an Aurovillian. At that time, I don't think he was yet Aurovillian. He comes from the ashram. He was working for Abhay Singh, who had the transport service for the ashram. And he came sort of already pre-trained for Mother Sri Aurobindo. I don't remember whether ever he came with me or with others to the darshan or Sri Aurobindo's room, but I think he would have come. He would have, maybe he even saw the mother. I don't know that. I don't remember that. The other thing which is when I went through a difficult period, psychologically, spiritual, maybe physically, he would always be there. He would immediately pick it up. I never told him. Suddenly, knock, knock, there was Kanan, and he was always there. He would help me. There's something which not only is with Kanan, I have the same experience with many people from the village, Tamil Aurovillians, when I was in aspiration. Sometimes we get very irritated, but when you are in need, they immediately know and they gather around you and support you, which I thought... His final going, he also left. Nobody knew how he left. He was found in the morning in his room, but it doesn't look as if he was going through a big fight. And I must say, he looked peaceful, he looked good. And I felt even this whole production, his family, he was a very respected person, turned out in the village. I never realized what a position he had in the village, because the whole village was there. They closed the shops. The village elders were sitting there in the sun for him. And I was very impressed by his position, which he never showed, which he never bragged about. But then this whole thing of the wailing and the crying and the tearing of the hair, and then this finally the making of the hearse and the flowers and the putting, then he's being put on, then the body is being tied onto the hearse, and then he's being taken. When he leaves the house, the women say goodbye to the body. That is when he is leaving. The women don't come to the cremation ground. And then they are going through the village. And I never knew, I always wondered why so many flowers when people have passed with their dead on the road. Because they're stripping the hearse again. We are jumping up and down and tearing quite violently all the flowers and throwing them on the... So in the end, when he comes to the cremation ground, that bamboo structure where all the flowers were tied on is bare. And it's just that. Mm. And then the preparation of his body and the putting of the straw and putting of the cake, the cow dung cakes and the clay and the last in it, the man, the pujari, says, now that's the last time you see him. So we all look at him and then he turns his head away from us, to the east, I thought. Then he covers it with a cloth and that's it. And when I walked back and I saw the family again, his daughter who had worked for so many years with Kanan in the youth center down in Mira, she had gone through the emotional upheaval and she was quiet. Mm. Within one day, this thing was done. I mean, it's not over, but it was that part of it was done. Mm. And I think it was very much in style of Kanan. He was a very emotional person, but he never made any drama. Even when I got angry with him, let's say he was drunk. Mm. He was, I'm in front of the mother, I will not touch again, and so on. There was something very, very, very beautiful, and I learned a lot from him, and I'm very grateful to him.
Yeah. I remember as a child once him having, you know, he used to always be the one, I mean, there weren't that many people who knew how to drive in those days, no? Mm. And I remember once him having a close call and he was very shattered. Mm. And that's also why he had decided to... Yeah. That was one time that he decided to stop driving because there was some... Yeah. And I remember it being marked... Yeah. Because it was marked on his face that some sort of shock.
You know, Renu, there was actually something where I had organized the nature camp or others with me, and he was driving the bus with 50 kids in it. And on the way back near Dindigul, he had an accident. He drove into the divider. Nobody got hurt, but he was taking off the driving job. Now, people say he was drunk driving. I don't believe, maybe he smelled a lot, I don't know. But I think it's a catch-22. He drinks bad stuff, and his eyesight goes. Mm. And his eyesight had gone. Mm-hmm. So I think it was good he wasn't driving anymore. But I know that being a driver was his
passion.
Caste, yeah. Also, his class.
Yeah.
And he was a good driver, but in the end, it was good he was not driving anymore. Mm. But that, you are right, and that marked him. That sort of was like a demotion in front of everybody, you know? And then there was a long time where there was nothing, he had nothing to do, and he was not happy like old people in the end. They don't want to be in the family. Mm. And he did not want, and then we arranged, and then he was having his house or hut down there, and the youth came, and people in the youngsters who came, the volunteers, he would tell them stories and teach them Tamil, and you know, he was like a mini guru down there. They really liked him, and he enjoyed it. But there were also many, many lean periods when there was nobody. He had nothing to do, so we thought of giving him a small TV would help him to get him away from the bottle, which it did. And also his health was really deteriorating. Mm. He had, in the end, I think it was okay. His daughter was there with him, and I had this typical daughter-father relationship, shouting but loving like this. Sort of. But I also remember I often would require his physical help. He was quite strong, actually, with the windsurfing and the boating. He would don't think he knew how to swim very well, but I would call him, help me, help me, help me, and he would there crawling out to drag me out of the surf. Very, very adventurous also. I think he also went through some kind of pilgrimage somewhere, I think. No, he went, he was quite, I remember he went to, I think he went down south to where Kartik went.
I remember also that when I was with you in the visitor center when the tsunami came and Kanan called you.
Yeah.
And I remember you saying, what do you mean, Kanan? This water has come, water has come.
I was really, I mean, I'm quite...
And you didn't believe him.
I'm quite a bully at so many scores. Sir, big wave, water, oh, Kanan. Let me, I come eventually. So what actually had happened? Yeah, what happened was I was in the night of the tsunami, I was down with a horse. And the horse suddenly got extremely agitated. It was going up and down on the fence and I thought, what's wrong with it? So I finally decided the only way is to ride him back to the stable up the hill where the horses are kept. And I took him, and then from there I went to have breakfast with you, and then I got this call. And I had been there 2 hours ago. What do you mean waves? Big water is coming. So later on, and actually I told him, you stay there now. No, no, sir, I'm going. No, no, you stay now. I'm coming down. So he was there. Luckily, in a way, the contour of the seashore there, it rises a little bit. It's not like, let's say, in Sri Mayan Eternity, where there were horrific story, and even in Repo. So the water did come up to floor level, maybe 20, 30 centimeters above floor. And he was holding out there and dragging things back when they were sucked out and so on. But they were strong, there was a, we didn't know. And I mean, there were other horrible stories where the, actually the water rose to a highly dangerous level. But just to say that our relationship, I was saying, you stay there now, you wait, I'm coming. Then he would stay, I mean, he would. And also with the ashram, I mean, it brings back a kind of situation where he comes from the ashram. He has been trained as a young boy in the workshop in the ashram. But he often also knew intuitively that this is something else, you know. This is some, Orville is something else, and we don't, you know, it's a... Then he would later on, after the whole thing with the banyan tree and so on, he would... Oh, these are people from the ashram.
They're a little bit stuck, no? The ashram is also perhaps a little bit more established.
Yeah. He was also respected in the village. I mean, many situations, obviously, when there were some issues with the village, then he would go and take, I take care. And he would be listened to. No, he has, also when you look at the whole family, he's... He's a figure, and
he has three children.
Yeah, yes. First, I called her Uma. I think her name is Usha.
Usha, and Shanti,
and Mutu. And then the whole number of grandchildren. I think some of them go to Auroville. Some of them are Aurovillian. Shanti is Aurovillian. I don't think Usha is Aurovillian.
I think so. I don't know, actually. Nowadays it's so odd because I feel like everybody is Aurovillian that I know.
Yeah.
And then there are these sort of artificial barriers about who is and who isn't. So
the thing is interesting also, maybe one I should speak to the farewell group, because one has to say, I'm very impressed. I heard, I was stopped, Kanan has passed away. They tried to phone me, I hadn't picked up the phone, so I heard maybe 2 hours later. And on the way, I stopped at, I phoned up Pala. And I phoned up Orada first. And she said, we immediately get into action. We are taking care of it. We are arranging the hearse. And speak to also Susie and Pala, Aluk. And they immediately offered, being an Aurevilian, to take up the full service and all this. So this is something where I feel one must be really grateful to. But his family, Mutu would be the eldest son of his, said, no, we do it our way. Yeah. And I was, must say, I was there somewhere in between. There is, for me, the middle way. There was something walking with him behind the hearse, the firecrackers, even that mad dancing in front, that shouting and wailing. At first it turned me off, and suddenly I got into it and I realized it burns up something in me. It allows a release, and I felt actually grateful.
I felt the same, because I sat with the women, and there was this, and it was an incredible sound. I was actually quite transported by it, by this wailing, and on one hand, it's really, it seems so kind of perhaps primitive, but on the other hand, you see the wisdom in it, because they do it and they get it over with, and perhaps we are more dignified, but then we carry it on forever and ever, and maybe not as healthy in a way. So I was also quite charmed, and then I was thinking, you know, how many thousands of years these rituals.
Yeah.
You know, I remember even Socrates saying, "Don't bring the women. I don't want to hear their wailing."
Yeah.
So you know, this has been a tradition that goes on for
thousands. It's ages. Like, why turn the head, you know, to this side? The things they put on the eyes and in the mouth, you know, they have some kind of shamanic kind of thing.
Yeah.
Even that dead chicken which was hung over his corpse, they had put a dead chicken. You didn't see it on this feet, there was a dead chicken. It reminded me of Socrates. What is that chicken to do with the dead?
Yeah.
Sacrifice a chicken. And so there is, I'm not saying you guys have to sacrifice a chicken for me when I'm going, but I think there is a...
We'll put one in the pot for you.
There is a...
No, they have a wisdom. That's the drumming and everything. You know,
yeah. It really pounds something out.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful to whatever is being done in Oroville, in the adventure ground and so on. But when I actually go there, I often feel, no, it's not my scene. This mournfulness and the sadness and the long-facedness. I think it would be good to be taken home from home to the wherever it's happening on our house.
I like it also.
You know?
And you know, apparently all the villagers participate in the making of the hearse.
Yeah.
So it's also a
gesture.
A gesture of goodbye. Yeah.
I think it's, without criticizing what's being done, I always felt the joyfulness is more in line with when Mother speaks about, you don't know how light of a small step it is, you know, it is nothing, it is, you know, like changing, maybe the soul decides to change the garment, no, for its faster progress or whatever, no.
As I think, as an evolving culture, we are still figuring out these sort of rites of passage, whether, you know, now we have a sort of it feels like a artificial form, whether the children are turning 18 and have to go and sit and write an essay at the entry group and all, or how we deal with our death, you know. I think we still have to develop our the right attitude, the right rituals, and it's curious because we have to develop our own rituals, and because we're in the rejection of religion or anything like that, maybe it's a little bit awkward, we haven't found.
Yeah.
But sometimes I feel like, you know, a master of ceremonies, even at a death, giving the space for people to talk and remember the person. I don't know, it's missing.
Yeah.
So we haven't found.
Yeah. When Mother talks about the two passages, the coming into the terrestrial atmosphere and the leaving, the soul leaving the body, she said, I've opened the passage. Well, and I think the birth has become much more conscious and much more aware. And Aurevilian, actually, again, this Orada and health service and Hilde, I think there is quite an... The other part, also factually, organizationally great, we haven't really yet... We are still carrying over certain inbuilt things from our own past, no? Somewhere, I feel, no?
Definitely.
And I think it's giving space to the gratitude and the joy, and that there is... Mother says there will be no agony for the soul to leave the physical. But we still seem to have a remembrance in our body and also in our ceremonies of something of the pain and the agony and the suffering and the sadness and so on, no? This we have to let go. Just a very personal thing. I still remember when your grandmother, my mother, left. It was also a little bit in between mournful, but at the same time we were sitting outside and having a drink of the room in Orison's home. And it was, people were walking around, her body was lying, we had put some ice under her and so on. And then she was brought out, I think I was participating in lowering her into the grave, but I remember Orison, I forget how old he would have been, that maybe eight or nine. He was not into this. I was sitting at the table, then he came to me and said, "Papa, shouldn't you start throwing some earth now?" closing the thing. So somehow in the symbolic gestures of our doing it, there should be a more playfulness, no? More. Kanan. I think Kanan would have been very proud, and you know, and I it came. It was good. It was a good closure, as it were, of his.
I felt happy in a way to participate in the village ceremony for somebody that was close to me, even though I didn't see him much, but I liked him.
Oh yeah.
I felt, and I was happy to see you also walking with the, and I stayed with the women. I was happy to see you walk.
No, he was always inquiring about you, and that is Isaiah, and that is Roshan, and how are they there? He was part of the family. He was my younger brother, you might say, or something. Orisil, so thin, and Orison came, and it was very Jan also, and Jana. Jana obviously also has helped a lot. And there was another thing, I mean, because after the accident with the car, there were things that he was actually taken off the master list, which I found a bit, what is this, weird. Punishing people now with status of Auroville. I let it be, but and then gratefully somehow, maybe due to Jana's pushing or whatever, or maybe Jana was in the anti-group and just put the name back on, I won't accuse her of that, he suddenly appeared again being an Auroville, and I'm grateful for that. You know. But he was being penalized.
That's silly. All right.
Thank you.